want to sketch tonight the outline of the topic we'll be doing for the next few weeks. In English, we use the phrase intellectual property. In Hebrew, at least in the modern halakhic literature, you won't find this in the primary sources as much, but in the modern literature, you'll find the term zechuyot hayotzrim, the rights of the creators, which is actually a more accurate description than intellectual property. Intellectual property is a legal term. It comprises, roughly in American law, three subheadings, basically. My wife works at the Patent and Trademark Office. It comprises copyright, patent, and trademark. We're not going to be discussing trademark very much. We'll touch briefly on trademark, but copyright and patent are the two things that the Poskim, what we call copyright and patent, are the two things the Poskim will be discussing. Copyright is essentially the right of someone who creates a work of literature, painting, a computer program, music, different kinds of, I don't know the exact formal definition, but different types of products of human communication, human literature. It doesn't have to be high literature, it can be popular stuff too. A computer program, not literature at all. But the right of a creator to his work and forms of communication, of art. Patents refer roughly to inventions. If I develop a process, the classic patent, an invention, a business method, there are design patents, but if I develop a technique, a way of doing something, so I have rights to it and I can prevent other people from using it, or I can charge them fees to use it. So in American law, we call these are rights, these are property. That's the term intellectual property. I can own a patent, I can sell it, I can license it. Copyright, the author owns copyright, he can sell it, he can license it, he can transfer it. So the question we're going to be discussing fundamentally is, does halacha have a notion of intellectual property? Well, more generally, as we said, zechuyos hayotzrim, the rights of creators, what rights do creators have to prevent other people from profiting off their work, off their inventions, off their literature? What right do they have to prevent other people? What rights do they have to demand payment, licensing, to control how their work is used? So this is the topic. People have remarked, we are beginning from 19th century tshuvas, not from Gemaras, which is the normal way to do halacha, because there aren't really any Gemaras on this topic. We will see the tshuvas occasionally bring certain gemaras, and some of them are commonly brought, but even those are kind of oblique, they're tangential, they're gavta gemaras, some of them, they're not clear sugyas in the sense that normal halacha is developed step by step from gemaras. Most of the ideas are kind of spring to life in the poskim, beginning really in the 19th century. That's what we're going to be focusing on. So, first, just a couple of notes on historically what kind of shalos were discussed. For the first several hundred years, I said it starts mostly in the 19th century, although we find some proto-discussions going back to the 16th, 17th century. The early discussions were mostly about publishing typically svarim, and they involved competition between the author and other people who wanted to publish a sefer, between printers and rival printers. You'll remember we had that tshuva of the Ramah about the printing the Rambam, competition between the Maram Padua's Rambam and another printing house printing a Rambam. That's a classic tshuva. That's going to be brought. It's going to be brought by many of the poskim. That is indeed one of the archetypal discussions of these issues. It's important to understand that there are two kinds of cases being discussed. You know, modern copyright means if I'm the Rambam and I write my Rambam, you can't publish it, even if you give me credit, you can't just publish it without my permission. But there's another issue, this is really the issue that was historically discussed. When the Maram Padua printed the Rambam, he hadn't written the Rambam, it wasn't his Rambam, he was publishing a work that had been out there for several hundred years. The issue was simply that the market wasn't big enough to support two Rambams, especially when one party was undercutting the other one on price, but the market wasn't big enough and competition itself was usher. And that's Hasagas Gvul, that's what we discussed. You know, that's what we've been learning the last two or three months, Hasagas Gvul, Ani Mahapech. So these issues get lumped together by the poskim a lot. A, copying the actual thing that I produce, that I have, intuitively, I have a right to it, because I was mechadish it. And B, just competition. If I'm investing, especially then, printing was a major investment before computers. You had to have a major initial outlay of typesetting and printing and doing all the work. And then you'd hope to recoup your cost by selling copies. So the competition was an issue. It wasn't necessarily that I owned the right to anything I was mechadish. Today we would call that public domain. The Rambam wasn't in copyright anymore. The Rambam was freely available. So a lot of the tshuvas you'll see kind of shift back and forth between what we would consider just competition and what they considered, what we would consider intellectual property. These things are often discussed together in the contemporary discussions. Also important to note that most of the discussion, basically all the discussion until pretty much the modern period, the last 20, 30 years or so, deals with commercial infringement. You're dealing with someone who is going to wholesale rip off somebody else's work and publish it himself, somebody who was going to compete against another printer. They were dealing with rival businessmen. All the questions we have today, can I download music? Can I copy a software program? Can I make a few copies of a sefer like we're doing here? These questions were not the ones that were typically discussed. Now, much of the arguments they make, much of their reasoning may apply to these cases, but personal infringement is something, it just wasn't a gap back then. Before they had Napster, before they had computers, the internet, before they had modern technology, infringement basically was on a large scale. It was commercial. The Dine Torah, the Tshuvas, the arguments were always about commercial infringement rather than a private person infringing for his own benefit. We'll see some of the discussions of how these svaras translate into the common questions we have about infringing on somebody's rights for our personal use. Now, just again, the bird's eye view, we'll see many of the tshuvas as we go, but the poskim who have tried to figure out what exactly is wrong with me stealing someone else's work, with me using someone else's sefer, printing a book someone else is printing, the poskim who try to figure out what exactly the problem is came up with a number of different theories. Broadly speaking, there are four or five different issues, different theories for what exactly is wrong with pirating someone else's book. So the first one, and the one we're kind of focusing on this week, is the Shaul HaMeshiv, the idea that a person has a right to something he creates. It's an inherent, it's just a right, it's something Halacha recognizes, just as secular law recognizes. Shaul HaMeshiv talks about a case of someone who developed some kind of adding machine, some kind of mechanical calculator in the 19th century, and he was paid royalties by the Polish government. And he says, so if the non-Jews have such a concept, we should have it too. He kind of cuts the Gordian knot of all the pilpul about how does Halacha get a notion of intellectual property. He just creates one. He kind of waves his hands and says that if they have it, we should have it too. Seichel, he says we have to have it. It's logical. It's generally agreed. Non-Jews have it. It's something which people universally recognize as making sense. So we kind of create such an attitude. He doesn't ground it really in any Gemaras. He doesn't ground it in any precedent. He has all kinds of pilpul throughout the tshuva about other things, but he jumps back and forth in different concepts. But he pretty much, the key part of the tshuva, he pretty much just creates such a right on its own, not reducible to anything else, just creates a right that an inventor, that an author has. He talks about adding machines, he talks about svarim, we would call patent, we would call copyright. He just creates these rights out of whole cloth, basically, and assumes they exist. And later poskim, see some of them later this week, later poskim have debated, agreed with him, disagreed, said he has no makar. The poskim go back and forth, but this is one basic approach, the simplest, most obvious, although least solidly grounded in precedent, ideas in halacha, that yes, halacha just recognizes a notion of the rights of a creator per se without reducing to any other principles that we know. The poskim who didn't accept this, or the Shaul HaMeshiv himself, in addition to this idea, have come up with a number of other theories, a number of other frameworks for understanding the rights of a creator. One of them, as we alluded to earlier, is the Hashgachas Gevul, the idea that certain kinds of competition were restricted by Chazal. Now, it's not at all obvious why Hashgachas Gevul should apply in most cases under discussion. As we've seen, Hashgachas Gevul is fairly, has a lot of details, it's fairly limited about when it applies. Ordinary competition is mutter. If you open a grocery store, I'm allowed to open up a competing grocery store. So if you stop printing a book, and I want to stop printing the same book, the Shas, the Rambam, the Pesachei Tshuva, any other sefer, it's not obvious why Hashgachas Gevul should actually prohibit me from copying. You're going to have a loss, okay, but every Hashgachas Gevul, the incumbent, is going to have a loss by the competitor. So again, we saw that there are some shitas that say if you destroy the first one totally, that was the case in the Ramah and the Rambam. He felt that the predatory pricing was so egregious and so severe, Hashgachas Gevul forbade it. That depends. I mean, how much you're undercutting the first publisher. But again, the point is, again, we're not going to rehash all of Hashgachas Gevul now, but Hashgachas Gevul has a lot of rules, and it doesn't generally forbid one competitor for opening up a competing store against an existing one. So Hasagas Gvul is one of the topics discussed at length by the Poskim, but we'll have to see as we go. It's not initially so clear why Hasagas Gvul should be such a major consideration here.
Is it possible they're using sort of like a combined svar that because it's inherently mine, that gives me a leg up, and then any competition maybe?
It is possible, yes. That I think is a very good point. There are some poskim when we studied Hasagas Gvul, there are some poskim who make this point that Ani Mahapech and Hasagas Gvul, all those forests about it being mutter, are only because you can do it, I can do it. We're equal. You're not any more entitled to the revenue than I am. But poskim Taka said, like Ramosha says, for example, after you're engaged, Ani Mahapech kicks in with a vengeance, because once she's rightfully his, you shouldn't be stealing her. So it definitely is possible, Hasagas Gvul, it's kind of this kind of a synergy between an essential right and Hasagas Gvul, and that would explain the Shalom Eshev, why he begins with this notion of right, and then throughout the Tshuva he keeps using terms like Hasagas Gvul. Someone told me that Rabbi Shachatovitz from Baltimore insists that the Shalom Eshev's real concern is Hasagas Gvul, not a right, but again, he says right, and most posts can understand that he introduces the Tshuva by saying that you have a fundamental right to your creation. So the Pshat, I think, very well could be, like you're saying, that these things work in synergy, that once you have an essential right, to inherent right to your creation, Mamela that becomes also Hasagas Gvul. Yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility. We'll have to see the Tshuvas as we go and see how we can develop that idea.
Why don't they bring the case with the person who goes up and shakes the olive tree?
On Yamanaka for Rosh Hashanah.
Right, because he puts in effort and somebody else.
Yeah, that's also a good point. The idea that, as we discussed, Hasagas Gvul had a lot of different cases and parameters. One of them is Ani Menachet Rosh Hashanah. If someone climbs a tree, shakes down olives, someone else wants to walk off with the olives, that's Aser, that's Gezel Pnei Darchei Shalom. And the Poskim explain that even in cases where Ani Mahapech won't apply, even where Hasagas Gvul won't apply, if once you're already Tareach to a certain extent, then that forbids other people from doing it. And I think we'll see some Poskim, I think we're going to see that some Poskim do invoke that as a model. Again, not so simple, because as we discussed, the Poskim debate what kind of Tareach is involved. Some Poskim say we require extreme tercha, risking your life sort of tercha, physical tercha. So some of that may apply in the case of the printing, some may not. But that is true. I think that is going to be a model that we'll see for a specific form of Hasagas Gvul. That is going to be a model. So these are two of the main models. Zela, apparently I have a right to my creation. Hasagas Gvul, Ani Menachev, Marufia, these kinds of Yisurim. That's the second category. The third one, which is very powerful, it's almost like cheating, but a very powerful argument is going to be Dina Malchus Adina. Certainly not enough time tonight, and possibly not even in the course of this limud, to get into a thorough, systematic discussion of Dina Malchus Adina, when the rule that halacha incorporates the rules of secular law into halacha and when not. But nevertheless, as we'll see a little bit this week and in future weeks, many poskim do argue that since the law has a well-developed body of intellectual property law, the rights of creators, and particularly since halacha doesn't, that's also a consideration, halacha may very well decide to incorporate some or most or all of relevant secular law and may expect you to follow that. And there are contemporary poskim, I believe, who consider this the most practical and realistic model for deciding what's mutter and what's usser. Since halacha can't always give you a clear answer, there are poskim who say that following the law would be recommended in this area. That's something we'll discuss a little bit this week, we'll see, in future weeks. A fourth model is the idea of Zenen of Zechaser. Zenen of Zelochaser, Zenen of Zechaser. This is not necessarily a model for forbidding somebody to use it, but it's a model that requires some sort of compensation be made to the right holder, as we would call him. Halach in general has an idea. In secular law, there's a notion of unjust enrichment. If you make money off someone else unfairly by using assets that belong to him without his permission, I don't know the formal legal definition, but there is an idea of unjust enrichment, that if you somehow benefit from somebody else unrightfully, unlawfully, he has a tviya against you, aside from any tviya of hezek, even if he can't show that you actually damaged him a certain dollar figure, he has the right to demand that you turn over to him the profits of what you did. Halacha has this notion. It's called Zenen of Zechaser. Zenen of Zelochaser is Pater. If I benefit and you don't lose anything from it, then whether I'm allowed to do it l'chatchila or not as a shayla, but b'dieved, you're not going to have a claim. But Zenen of Zechaser, if I benefit and thereby cause you a loss, even if the loss perhaps is not commensurate to what I gained, even if I gain much more, I can be held liable to compensate you for the hana'ah that I had. As we'll see, these rules of Nana and Chaser, some poskim will try to find models requiring the person, if I benefit from your work, if you worked on a computer program, if you worked on typesetting and laid out a page, and I make a photo offset, a photo mechanical reproduction of it and sell it, since I'm benefiting from all your hard work, there is an approach in the poskim that certainly b'di'evit I can be forced to pay you some or all my profit, and even l'chatchila, there may be some basis for me to stop you. These are four of the major models for our topic, and as we go on, we'll see, again, most poskim invoke at least one and sometimes more than one of these and often mix them together in ways that make it difficult to untangle. But just in general, these are probably the four main considerations the poskim make. And as we go forward, we'll see how the poskim apply these sugyas to the cases they discuss.